I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Baldur's Gate. Named role-playing game of the year in 1998 and 2000. With over 3.5 million units sold, the Baldur's Gate series are the most popular RPGs ever on the PC.
Well, let's qualify that with on the PC.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Play Retro. It's your favorite retro video game podcast. I'm your host, Scott Johnson, and I can't decide which of these character portraits I should use for my very cool character. Also, how come this tavern smells like cheese?
Gouda. And I'm your other host, Brian Dunaway, and excuse me while I locate my miniature giant space hamster, which I usually keep in my bag of holding, but he must have escaped into the realm of late 1990s RPG gaming. Take heart, fellow adventurers, for you have curried the favor of Boo. Now, you're the spawn of Ball.
Yeah,
you're the spawn of Ball.
Is it Ball or Bail?
I say Ball. People say Bail. I like Ball. Because then I can go Ball to the Ball today. But I can do that.
Because when you're in like the version of this that's in Diablo, it's Bail.
But, right. Well, we're going to be doing like we're going to be talking about like Dungeons and Dragons crap today on Play Retro. So, you can say I've learned a very important lesson over the years with Dungeons and Dragons. You can call it however the crap you want.
Yeah, you don't need to. Don't live by somebody else's definition.
There's only one rule.
Yeah.
In D&D.
Yeah.
That's it. You have fun. That's it. That's the real rule.
That's the only rule. That's right. Some people think you need to be a freak show about every little rule and detail. You don't.
No.
You need to have a DM who knows how to have fun, and then you as a player need to have fun within his fun, and then everyone will have fun. If you get one of those guys that's like, oh no, I'm sorry, house rules say that, like, if you start getting into territory where fun is being stripped out of your D&D game, you need to find a new group. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. You're not doing it right. You failed at D&D. Roll again. Right.
Roll again, baby. So last week we missed a show. We apologize. Scott was down with the COVID. I'm feeling much better than I was then, and we're happy to be back doing it. I wanted to tell you real quick about what I did, because when I'm sick, I cannot video games that need you to think can't do it.
True story. And COVID's bad about kicking the thinking.
No, it doesn't want. I mean, I tried a couple of things. Like, I tried this new, and I really like it, and I'm going to keep playing it. But when I was at my sickest, there was no way I could do much to play that Testament. It's on Game Pass, and it's made by Obsidian, and it's really, really good, and it's all reading. It's like tons of reading and story.
Yeah. I almost downloaded that this past weekend. I've been getting big back into Forza Horizon 5 with the community. That game's good.
You should try it. Yeah. It's called whatever the name is, but it's so
Pentiment.
Pentiment. There you go, Pentiment. It's like it's like Pentiment, so it's like Testament and Penitence. I don't know.
There you go.
Anyway,
the penitent man. What does the penitent man do? And he's supposed to. The penitent man
The penitent man shall pass. He shall pass.
Is that what he shall pass?
He says, "Ah, the penitent man shall pass. The penitent man shall pass." Says, what's his name over and over? Sean Connery.
Does Gandalf say "fly, you fools," or you say "run, you fools"?
He says "fly, you fools."
Yeah, yeah. Fly. I always think it's "run." I don't know why.
Yeah, that's weird. Run, well, they've got a cave. They've got a cave troll. So. You need to fly. Yeah.
That's not a cave troll, is it? He's dealing with the Diablo, right?
Oh, that's the Balrog. Yeah, Balrog.
The Balrog.
Yeah, he's a dick. Anyway, since I was sick, I only could play dumb stuff, so I played a little bit of retro, and guess what I played the most of? I got in the biggest groove, dude, where I didn't have to think about it. All it was is directional stuff. Those are the only skills I had to tap, and that was just Miss Pac-Man.
Just
played her over and over and over and over. Loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a good one. Yeah, because you don't have to worry about doing much of anything. Just going in directions, just getting in that flow. Don't even use your brain. Use the subconscious flow.
And I was never one to memorize patterns with her, with Miss Pac-Man. Yeah, Pac-Man OG. I did have pattern memorization, and it always feels cheap when I do it. But with Miss Pac-Man, I never did that. And maybe it's because it was harder to do there. I don't know. I'm sure somebody's figured out a way to crack that egg. But I just like getting in the groove. And just kind of one step ahead of Pinky and Blinky and Clyde and the other one.
When we talked about Miss Pac-Man, didn't we determine that they did try to make it harder and it didn't have patterns like you would do on Pac-Man.
Yeah,
by the way,
ghosts,
I never really
the ghosts behave differently.
What's that now?
I was gonna say the ghosts behave differently in Miss Pac-Man. I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember Pac-Man patterns. I'd only learned like moment to moment. Pac-Man patterns, like, so if I was like in a corner somewhere and I would have like a particular move, but that's more like it. I didn't really learn patterns as much as I learned moves.
Yeah,
I'd be like, okay, I'm in this corner, this is the move I go through, this usually gets me through here. I never learned any of the big stuff. It's kind of like the difference between that nerd that could speed solve the Rubik's Cube with one hand versus, you know, me who would look at it and I've got some moves.
Yeah.
But I don't know all the patterns.
I bet you had more fun than that guy, the guy that finished.
I guarantee you I did.
Yeah, I think that's true. And don't get me wrong. I was not like some kind of Pac-Man wizard, but I was good at remembering like the first three levels, what all the behaviors were and where I needed to be at any given time. After that, things sped up to a point that I'm sure I changed it up. But in her case, in Miss Pac-Man's case, no, man, just go.
I want to go back to you talking about your Fred Savage movie moment where you were the Pac-Man wizard.
Pac-Man wizard.
What was it?
Yeah, the old famous song, Pac-Man Wizard by The Who.
Pac-Man Wizard.
Yep, put your quarter in and make the guy go down the thing. And then the ghosts try to get you. Oh, no, that's the song.
Wait, I got a question for you.
Go.
In The Wizard, the movie.
Yeah.
Did you watch that with Fred Savage?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A couple times.
Okay. Wait. I want you to tell me if you remember what was he playing? What was the game he was playing?
Mario Brothers, Super Mario Brothers 3. Dur.
Oh, yeah. Fred Savage was playing that?
Yeah, the whole movie was an advertisement for Super Mario Brothers 3, basically, for the NES. Yeah.
I thought it was his little brother who was doing it.
Was it? No. Except that Fred Savage, no, he played, right? He had the glove and everything. And then Christian Slater showed up and went, "Hey, you guys," and that was about it. That's the movie.
And that was the movie. And you just watched The Wizard here. Yeah.
I haven't seen it in a while.
I haven't seen it in forever.
Yeah.
And I was trying to remember because I was thinking, wait a minute. I think he wanted to be then he ended up having to take his little brother or something. And I was like, it was Lucas or something. Yeah, Lucas. There you go. Dice Tomato confirms it was Lucas, his little brother, who was the wizard.
Not the movie Lucas.
No. Jackie Vinson, who played the character Lucas, was the.
So George Lucas walked into an arcade.
No, Luke. No. Just one name, Lucas. Okay. I guess his last name was Woods. I don't know.
Woods was their last. See, like I remember nothing. I remember somebody
showed up. Maybe it was a Lucas. Maybe it was Jimmy. Jimmy, maybe that was it.
Jimmy, maybe. Somebody showed up with a power glove, and that's all. I just don't remember much else. That's it. I just remember feeling like the whole thing was a Nintendo commercial, and I was fine with it at the time, but now I think it's
one day we're gonna do Play Retro the movie edition, and we're gonna go back and watch some of these.
Why don't we? We should.
I haven't seen since 1989.
Another reason to join our Patreon. We'll do some bonus shit over there. I like that idea. Yeah. Hey Brian, you got your Mega Drive 2 from the Japan, and you opened it, and we saw a video of it. At least some people saw a video of you opening it and unboxing it. Any further thoughts on your time with the Mega Drive 2 Mini?
Absolutely. I showed a couple weeks ago on screen. If you're listening to it on podcast, I'll try to describe it best I can. The Mega Drive 2 Mini, all the way from Japan. It has Japanese by default on the menu system. I changed that to English right away because I don't speak or write or read Japanese. But you'll see right here on screen, it looks just like the Model 2. So if you can imagine the Model 2 version of the Sega Genesis or Mega Drive, but it's just really small. It's about about a third or maybe a third the size of a regular one, maybe a fourth the size.
Yeah.
Has the red cart slot. Nothing goes in it really, unless they start selling those add-ons where you can put it in there and stack it on like they did the first Mini.
Yeah, the first Mini also had a slot, but there's nothing in there, right?
Right. And there's nothing in there. So it's an empty slot, but they're probably going to do stuff like that. And it's got the blue button. It comes with one six button controller. The fight controller also has a blue start button. I'll show you right quick. This is the Genesis, the U.S. model that was released, also manufactured in Japan and distributed from Japan on this side. And then on my right side is the Mega Drive. So
are they doing the CD? Are they going to do a CD looking thing that can go on the other side of it? Because the way that worked was you had to a tray.
Yeah.
And that tray it was a CD player on the side, but it had a built-in bottom tray that you put your Genesis 2 in. And it was the Model 2 of the Sega CD. And then you had them sitting side by side, whereas the old setup was the old Genesis on top of a front-loading Sega CD, which is a big old fat boy. I was way into that second series and also ended up with a 32X. So what I really want to do, if this is all possible, and I'm not a 3D printer, so I don't have all that shit to do at home, I want to take that. I want to get that Mini. I want to slot in a 32X, and underneath on the side, I want to have the second edition of the CD thing. Even if it doesn't work, I don't care.
Yeah.
I want to recreate that little stack so that I can just have it, you know?
I'm sure they have it. There's actually three different ways you could do it. These most recent Minis, they do come with six games that are part of the Sega CD collection.
Yeah.
If you remember, like you were talking about, there's the stack. They actually made the series or the Model 1 also with an extension for that little plate that you could put underneath the Sega CD. So you had the full stack like you was talking about, then you had the side-by-side which had the Model 2, but they also made a side-by-side for the Model 1 as well.
Oh, I didn't know that. Interesting.
I saw one of those at a retro store recently, and I was like, I didn't know they had that way, because that kind of put a crimp in my trying to figure out how I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
Because I was like, do I want to, because I got a Model 1 and a 2. One and a 2. And I got the Model 2 sound chip is way better. It's not nearly as ganky. All those nasty sounds you hear.
Yeah,
That's the Model 1.
Yeah, no, I feel you. Well, interesting. I'm very excited to see more about that device. So we'll talk about it on future shows, of course. But maybe I just need to pull the trigger and get the... I don't even care about the Japanese one. I just want the American one. I just want to get that.
You need... Yeah, look at that. What do you think about that?
That looks pretty good. You have a nice little setup going on there. That's your little...
No, you think so? Yeah, look at that. Yeah. It's the real... I got my Lego. I got my Lego over here.
Yeah.
Anthony put together another retro Lego set. This was the NES version. So if you imagine the American version of the NES, that front slot load, it's got that. And it's got a little TV all made out of Legos. And it's got Mario doing his running. And you can actually, there's a little crank on the side of this thing. And if I could reach it, I would run through. But it's, you remember those little child toys you used to have where you'd have a little hand would crank it and the background would move and the character in the front would stay in one spot?
Sure,
it
sure.
It would do just that. Yeah. That's my nice. Mini's in there too.
Do you assemble these yourself or they came to you this
way? Oh, I did not. Anthony was kind enough to assemble these for me and then send them to me through the mail. And he did a fantastic job at packing them. Only one little table leg came off, and even at my skill level of Legoing, I was able to put it back together. So,
nice.
And now it's on display, baby, at the Dunaway household. Dunaway, come on over.
Game display countertop unit deal.
Mm-hmm.
There. That's awesome.
There.
Well, well done. We're going to play something very different today, though, here on the show. And we're going to start with this.
Shall we play a game?
We shall indeed. Today's discussion topic is going to be the early, and by early I mean the very first, two Baldur's Gate games from BioWare, BlackRock. What was it? What were they called?
BlackRock. Nice. It's Black Isle Studios.
Sorry. Interplay and TSR. There's a lot more people involved and a lot less of the BioWare name than I remember after going back and looking at these. But these are two of the most impactful RPGs of all time, certainly Western RPGs for sure. And they were interesting in that they were the first real mainstream successful, what we would call a CRPG or computer RPG. And the concept of these things was, hey, it's D&D under the hood, but you're going to play it in a way that is a little bit more action-y. The game basically let you pause and make decisions and do things and rearrange who's doing what and when and what order. But when you would unpause it, I think just the old-fashioned space bar back in the day, and you played a million games like this since, but you would unpause and the combat would happen, would just happen. It's not turn-based. Right. It's just going and it's sort of real time. But what's happening behind the scenes and down in the little counter or in the little display window is you're getting results of dice rolls, but you're doing it in real time.
There's a little guy inside your computer going, oh, come on.
Basically, yeah.
Roll for
kind of like it literally is doing that, but doing it at such speed that a human could never do it. Yeah. And here's a little bit of the introduction to that game, which I don't know that holds up very well, but I'm going to play a little audio from it. Here you go.
No, you can't.
Oh, that last hit is pretty rough.
It's pretty tough.
You know that guy's voice in the beginning. Hear me play a little of that again.
No, you can't.
I will be the last.
That guy, he does all kinds of VO in games and TV and stuff. In fact, I think he's the guy who did, I may have this wrong, but I think he's the one that used to do, "The following program is brought to you with limited commercial interruption" on Hulu, back when they used to do that.
Right. Did he do that one?
Pretty sure that's him. You might be right. I think he's the guy with the really cool white dreads.
Right.
And he does tons of VO for all kinds of stuff. Bunch of Warcraft stuff. Anyway, Baldur's Gate 1, 1998. Part of what people consider was still one of the greatest years in video games. That was the year of StarCraft and Brood War. It was a year of Half-Life 1 finally came out and was a thing. And Baldur's Gate was definitely among those high echelon of games that year. On consoles, you had Ocarina of Time and other ones that escaped my brain. But it was a big... Metal Gear Solid came out that year. It was a big deal that year for a lot of games on a lot of platforms. And on the PC, this was their big shining moment to have Baldur's Gate 1 happen. And it was huge. It's based on the Forgotten Realms Dungeons and Dragons campaign setting with the same name. A lot of people had heard of it if you were familiar with D&D at the time. I should mention that the underpinning roles and stuff I talked about before were all running to a second edition of the game.
Right.
But it's interesting. You earlier were telling me how, while that was true, there were some character packs in there that were actually from 3.
Right. Yeah. In Baldur's Gate, the first Baldur's Gate, it was second edition rules as close as they could get it. In the second Baldur's Gate, they added some class kits from the third edition. That's so people sometimes get in there and they'll think, oh, this is third edition. But from my understanding from interviews I read, it was only the class kits. Now, I played as much Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 as I could this past week and read as many interviews as I could and learned so much stuff is just ridiculous. So if I'd get anything wrong, let me know. And I believe I wanted to go back. I was trying to do a quick search. I'm pretty sure Sarvok, who's your bad guy in the first one, is, I definitely know this part, that's Kevin Michael Richardson, is the voice actor. And I think he's also the narrator in the game, the first game as well. He's also, you may remember him as in some stuff for like the Cleveland Show and all that stuff. And what else? I think he does Dr. Hibbett on The Simpsons, at least.
Oh, he might now, so, yeah. Because for a while there, that was, well, for the longest time, that was Harry Shearer. And then they decided in the last couple of years they wanted to make that stuff more authentic. So they hired somebody. I didn't know it was him, though. That's cool.
Right. Was he also Goro in Mortal Kombat, I think? I think that sounds right. Once again, feel free to correct me. There are so many amazing voice actors in this series, like Jim Cummings as Minsk, and he's Winnie the Pooh. He does Winnie the Pooh. We got Jennifer Hale. I mean, there's just so many. I couldn't even start to name all the amazing voice actors.
A lot of the people you would consider like all stars, the sort of aging group of early, you know, game voices that you hear now all the time. A lot of these people were in this game, and rightly so. It was a big production. It felt like they really cared about that level of quality. Whereas console games and other stuff that were getting into voice acting were not great.
They were pretty bad.
Yeah,
they were kind of limited too. I'll say this for the PC: console games typically did not consist of multiple discs. The first Baldur's Gate for PC, for some reason, PC users were okay with this. It's like, how many discs you got for this game? 5. That sounds about right. And so I loaded up the first Baldur's Gate, right? First of all, I got the enhanced edition, but I did play the Baldur's Gate 1 on my my thin client PC, old school Windows 7, Windows XP compatibility mode. And I had 5 ISOs for Baldur's Gate 1. You load up just the first disc and you start playing. And then once you get to a certain story point, then you load up the next disc.
Right.
Baldur's Gate 2, not the same. Mm-mm. 4 disc. And you had to, this is how many disc swaps you have to do when you're playing Baldur's Gate 2, by the way. You have to put the first disc in, then ask for the second disc, then the third, then the fourth. Then you go back to the second disc and then you go back to the first disc. That's all before you even play. That's all before you even start rolling a character.
Yeah, it's a lot. I felt like 2 was a little big for its britches, you know?
Right.
For the tech at the time, anyway. The way to do this now, obviously, and I would highly recommend these two versions, the enhanced edition of these two games are excellent. They're very good. They are very good at both retaining the, what made the original games great and how they looked and all that other stuff. But, you know, clearly there's an advantage to having a single install. You're not doing swaps all day. The interface is a little cleaned up and they, what else they run? Oh, and they run it widescreen. So you get the full use of your monitor in that case.
Widescreen. There was a mod for, both of these back in the day that allowed you to, run those things in widescreen as well. But I think Baldur's Gate 1 released at 640 by 480 and then Baldur's Gate 2, was 800 by 600. That's right, Scott. Mm-hmm. 800 by 600 resi. That was, whoa.
Yeah, I was locked at that. I remember that was the same. Diablo 2 was like that roughly the same year. I think it was also 2000, maybe 01. Can't remember
right
now.
Right.
But they were both criticized. I remember this at the time. People criticized these games for having stuck themselves or limited themselves within 800 mm-hmm. by 600 resolution when everybody else was supporting 1024 by 768 or higher.
Right.
It's still kind of early in resolution days, but yeah, I didn't mind. It was fine. Yeah, I played it.
I didn't mind either. Did we talk about this pre-show? You kind of asked me if I had played Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 much, and I said, not really, because during this time period, I was more into, you know, action games. I was more doing first-person shooters. And this kind of felt to me when I saw it, even though I had diehard D&D friends. I was into D&D, but then I had like serious D&D friends.
Sure.
And they were really into it. And when I looked at it, I was like, oh, okay. I'm more into 3D stuff right now. It's 1998, you know, in 2000s when these launched. And I'm like, it looks like a lot of work. Is what it looks
plus
like.
Plus, we were saying pre-show, like you and I were both playing a lot of Quake, playing a lot of Half-Life. We were really into, you know, Unreal, all that. All that stuff was hitting and was huge. And we were using GameSpy and that was a whole jam then.
Yeah.
And there was like this was a different game. How do I put this? This is a whole different club.
Yeah, this is a different club.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
And I played one. I played and beat one. I pretty much mainlined it and really liked it. I loved it. Partly because I was like, yeah, this game doesn't do that lame old turn-based, even though nowadays I love turn-based gameplay. It's kind of my favorite. But back in the day, I was a real puss. It's not the word I was looking
puss.
For.
Puss. Really, I was a big puss. I had a big puss on my face.
I was a big jerk about it. I was like, turn-based, forget it. That's grandpa gaming. Let's play, you know, some real-time business. And I was really into StarCraft, really into Command & Conquer. Yes. And this and had see, this real-time this system. Like
From behind this, behind my friend who's playing it, I'm like looking and going, okay, what are you doing here? Okay, is this turn based? Because it looks turn based. No, that's real time. No, well, why am you sitting there?
I mean, you're pausing. You're doing a pause, and then you do shit, and then you unpause, and then your guys go do their thing. So it was kind of like a little half step. But it worked for me, and I really enjoyed it. And then two, I played but didn't beat, and I think partly because I was super into. Again, the shooter world was all our oyster. That's what we were doing.
Yeah.
And so we were just
so epic. I didn't realize how big it was until I started playing it this week.
No, two's
like
huge.
We said, I was going to do Baldur's Gate. I was like, I've been wanting to visit Baldur's Gate. I know enough D&D to kind of feel my way around. Mm-hmm. Man, was I overwhelmed.
Yeah, it's a lot.
There's a lot of stuff here because I was thinking a game from 98, 2000. I'm like, how much content could it actually have? Too many.
No, it was a lot.
Dude. It was like 40 plus just the mainline stuff on both of these. It was just freaking ridiculous.
Yeah, to this day, it is still enough content to call it a full game. Like, it's a big-ass game.
It's a big game.
Yeah, and I recommend actually playing it. I think these enhanced editions make it super simple to do, and the PC versions are great. The iPad versions are really good, by the way. Surprisingly good.
I wanted to
get
to the iPad version. I did not. It's like $10 or something.
It's cheap.
It's inexpensive for the amount of content.
No, it's a killer deal, and they run great. I have one on there. I don't know if I got two. I may have, but I know I got one for sure, and it played really, really well. I think what I want to do though is hunker down on a PC and play the enhanced edition again there.
I think we should play Baldur's Gate 2, the enhanced edition, Shadows of I always just call it Baldur's Gate 2 because I'm never going to get into the Shadows of took me forever just to figure out how to say Imowen. That took me forever. That's one of the characters that this kind of running through these stories here, because you are the children of Baal.
Yeah, the children of Baal.
Bang to bang.
Yeah, everybody, you know, technically we're all children of Baals, but this is a very special.
Right, we're children of Baals. Yeah, in this case, it's just the children of Baals who are causing problems, and they're also the solution. And so there you go.
Well, let's get a little taste of that.
You spent your youth in the library fortress of Candlekeep, under the kind tutelage of your foster father, Gorion. Imowen shared this home, a kindred spirit. Her background was as mysterious as your own. Gorion's murder brought answers to your questions when his killer, Saravok, was revealed to be your brother.
Oh, these family connections, man.
Yes, rough. The familiar is good, and it's a strong line through all the way through the first one, the second one. And this first one, you start off at basically a level one type character, and I think you top out somewhere around, I don't know, eight. Something
eight
like that,
10 maybe. Yeah, it's low.
Yeah, they kept it. They had to scale it back a little bit, so you could only.
Well, it's a lot like. I mean, it's a great deal like actual D&D. You're not blasting through levels. It's a slower process, and you know the differences between levels aren't massive. Like in some ways, I feel like modern RPG players are a little bit spoiled. Because all the numbers have been scaled up to seem like a bigger deal in your MMOs and your action RPGs and things like that. Whereas, you know, D&D, you're super awesome at level 4.
Yeah.
And you have abilities that are just like mind-blowingly cool and all of that. But it doesn't seem, the numbers don't seem that cool. They seem low. So I don't know. You have to get over that hump, I guess, if you're new to the genre. Two is really big. If I was to say the best way to play these original two games is actually play them back to back. I think they're better as a complete experience than they are separate. And it sounds a little weird to say that. I think they're excellent games on their own, but I think one and two ought to be played together. And I think these enhanced editions make that really easy and simple to do.
I don't even think I'll be honest with you. I played. And I didn't have the nostalgia goggles. Now, you played the first one all the way through,
I did.
You have some nostalgia for it. That's cool.
Yeah.
I like the first one, and I've gone back and played more of it. But I had no trouble just leaving one behind and jumping straight into two and spending almost all my time in two, because all the characters that you meet later on as you party up. This game is about partying. You play by yourself. You can play multiplayer, but the pause causes a lot of trouble with those kind of that kind of gameplay. So if you play the first one, you play them by yourself, you'll eventually meet more of your party as you go along, and you'll meet some of these same characters that you play with in Baldur's Gate 2. Mm-hmm. And they start off in 2 where you've lost. You can choose to kind of go with a storyline and dialogue choices to go like you've lost your memory, and you just get to know the characters by asking questions. And right. So it contextualizes all the stuff. Story-wise, I don't think it's really necessary to play 1. I just, like I said, I kind of just went jumped through it right quickly 2. And was like, eh.
Nothing wrong with that. 2. I mean, 2 is, well, it's the last official one we've gotten, if you don't count Planescape Torment, Icewind Dale 1 and 2, yeah. All these other spinoffs, Dark Alliance 1 and 2 on PlayStation. Like
the Throne of Baal was also massive content, 20 plus hours of content, and they was originally looking to make it as Baldur's Gate 3, and they ended up just...
They just tacked it onto 2, basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because we now live in a time where we're supposed to hear in the next few weeks when Larian, the current developer of Baldur's Gate 3, is going to officially release that damn thing.
Yes, they're going to announce in December. That's when? Right. When we're going to get the full deal. You can buy now on Steam, but I think me and Scott talked about this earlier, too. I'm going to wait. Scott already has it, but I'm going to wait before I get my first impression.
Well, it's funny. I got it as a gift from a friend for a birthday, and
yeah.
I was incredibly grateful for it. But I cannot bring. I've done the prologue and kind of the start of the story and stuff. But right. I don't want to go any further. Oh, and yeah. I also tested to make sure. I wanted to see how it ran on a Steam Deck, and it runs great. So there's that.
That's interesting. How did you play? Okay, so 1 and 2, even with the enhanced editions, you better have some pretty good vision or some good glasses. Because,
yeah, that's going to be hard.
That's a lot of dialogue.
I can't imagine playing this on that small of a screen.
No.
3, you can do scale. You know, there's options for accessibility.
We're modern now. Yeah.
But back in the day, these were little tiny scribbly words, and you were going to have to just sort of live with how small they were. I'm looking at the screen right now. I still think they're incredibly small.
Really small. It's a young man's game. I think the iPad version, I want to say the iPad version has tech scaling, even on the enhanced editions.
Yeah, it might.
Or whatever version.
It wouldn't surprise me that if it did, or just given how much dialogue there is. And this is a very dialogue-heavy experience. And if you've played, any games since these that were kind of based on these, whether they were actual Infinity Engine or something else, then you know how much you're into for story. Like all of these Obsidian games, like Pillars of Eternity 1 and 2, amazing, amazing games. And they are like, you know, straight children of Baldur's Gate in terms of gameplay and style and setting and just all of the tropes they use and everything. It's not actual D&D underneath, but it's close enough. And they're excellent as well. But these are all meant to be big, heavy reads, sometimes spoken, not always. There is some dialogue in this game that is often spoken, but there's big chunks of this game, 1 and 2, where they just make you read. And it's okay. Yes. It's okay. You know?
And, you know, I'm going to back up and retract some of the things I said about 1, that you don't have to have 1 to enjoy 2. I may be in a place in my life where I'm okay with a whole bunch of dialogue and just reading and just absorbing the content, not getting in any hurry.
Mm-hmm.
Baldur's Gate 1 is more of an adventure, like you would do over the weekend, whereas Baldur's Gate 2 is like a freaking epic. I mean, it's like it is huge with dialogue choices. They start getting into the idea of, you know, using romance, like. We never really looked at any RPG games with, you know, like, is that a metric, what we're doing here with our dialogues, getting a, you know, a romantic answer out of some of this stuff. We didn't think about that. And I think I also read or saw in an interview that it was something like, it was like having three Game of Thrones books together, the amount of dialogue. I mean, it was just, you wouldn't read all of that.
Yeah.
But there's that much dialogue in it.
No, that's absolutely true. They're freaking humongous. And I did recently grab, I still have them on my hard drive, the Icewind Dale 1 and 2 enhanced edition. It comes as a single game. Highly recommend that. Icewind Dale 1 and 2. Oh, ironically, that game I was talking to you about your pre-show, that Pentiment game.
Yes.
The game was run, or you know, the lead designer on that game is all the way back from the Icewind Dale days, which is pretty great.
Nice.
Anyway, those games also just magnificently huge, sprawling, epic tales. If you are a reader and you like fantasy, then this is going to be your jam. If you're a gamer who likes to skip dialogue because you think you don't need it, I don't think we're talking about your genre here.
I know. I think you better keep on looking.
Yeah, keep moving on down the road. Did you ever play either any of the Icewind Dales or the like?
I did play a little bit of the Ice. I was getting back into these types of games at about that time. So played those a little bit.
I want to say 2000 and maybe 2000 and then 2003 or something for 1 and 2.
Right, right.
They were excellent. Planescape Torment's another one I didn't want to not mention here. It uses the Infinity Engine as well. Although a modified one, real ugly now, if you go back and look at it, the enhanced edition's a little better, but as far as story goes, I've never played an RPG with a story that impacted me more than Planescape Torment. It's so good. Brian, it's so good.
I don't think I played that one at all.
Oh, you really should. I mean, it's the most of all of these, probably the most non-mainstream.
Right.
It's one that you had to kind of know about or hear about, or your friends would tell
you. Oh yeah, this is so ugly too. Oh, look at those. Oh,
it's very ugly.
Those tiles. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, it's very ugly, but you know, it's all this.
Speaking of which, this game, this engine, the Infinity Engine, was doing something that was kind of interesting. This was very early on. This was not a DOS game. So if you're looking at this game going, was this DOS? It was not. It was DirectX, Direct Draw. Very early on stuff, it was able to like render like files directly out of like Photoshop.
Yep.
It could so instead of doing what people were usually doing, which was doing the tile base, where it would be like shuffling tiles around. Mm-hmm. You actually had a huge giant map, and then you just put sprites on there. You put those animated sprites on it. So it was a whole new world, exciting. And boy, this other one, boy, woo. Yeah. That textures on that is muddy and
well, it's meant to be a little to be a little gross because it's the setting is pretty dark. But the thing I like about all of these games and the Infinity Engine stuff in general, Infinity, not Affinity. I keep saying those.
Yeah, two. Yeah. Infinity, like Infinity. Infinite.
Yeah, Infinite. It was the reason that I think they were cool is because it was the first time I remember feeling like these worlds were made of these little intricately made things of pots and books and tables and floor tiles and like weird little stones, and like to me this is the establishment of the kind of aesthetic that I still to this day really like when a game comes out and does this. It's obviously very different today. If they're using a fully 3D engine, you can do all of this rendered out and beautiful, you know, wonderfully lit, awesome, high resolution stuff. But I'm still just fascinated by this is a little table and here is a dude table.
It's just like that. It's like little miniature trains with people and stuff. And they're all little running around the little town. You're just God, you know, burning them.
Yeah. And look, I get that it's a ton of work, right? The people who put these together, especially if you're in the environments that are very varied and you don't feel like you're seeing a lot of repeating stuff. I mean, I'll bet these artists were just killing themselves all the time.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's horror stories. I mean, the BioWare was started with by three doctors and some developers, not to downplay their part, but the doctor story is kind of interesting because they're the money guys, you know, they're the guys who are pushing stuff around. And there was three of them to begin with. And Dr. Yip, He stepped out after the first Baldur's Gate because of the crazy amount of hours that they were putting into Baldur's Gate. And this goes on. This is a culture that evolved everywhere in the game industry of making these huge games, of overworking your people. Mm-hmm. And Baldur's Gate 2 had a little better from the interviews I watched. Baldur's Gate 2 was a little more sensical, but they had veterans by that point in time. In Baldur's Gate 1 was just kind of like a bunch of people going, I think we could do this. Well, how should we do this? Let's make some characters. And they would make they made a lot of the you know, the NPCs in the game from based on their character sheets. They were
the
doing.
Two remaining doctors, the famous doctors. They were obsessed with the Ultima stuff, Ultima series. And as a result, they were like, "Well, we think we can do that better." And those two guys were there with the company all the way up through and beyond the sale to EA, which now isn't that long ago. But have recently gone off and done their own thing. They're not in game development anymore. One of them makes beer, I think. Like, literally is just like full-time brew dude. And,
these guys are like, I don't know, man. You gotta love that kind of drive, right? I'm going to be a doctor. All right, let's do it.
Yep. I want to make video games.
Let's make some crazy ass games that are going to be super deep. All right.
Yeah.
I think I'm just going to brew some beer now. Sounds good.
Doctor. Okay, doctor. And they go and do their thing.
All right, doc.
And they're, you know, BioWare is now a name of just to be reckoned with. Even though we've come, you know, we've kind of dropped some notches after the EA acquisition and a bunch of failed stuff. People still get pretty excited about what those guys are doing next. Don't forget, we got the entire Mass Effect out of these people. We got the Star Wars, The Old Republic stuff. Some amazing games. Neverwinter Nights is still one of my favorite things I ever had a mouse in my hand for. I'm going to sneeze. Excuse me.
Neverwinter Nights is where I started getting back into this stuff heavy.
Dude, that was so good. They had all this like creation tools. You can make your own scripting. You could basically build your own RPG in that engine. I loved Neverwinter Nights so much.
Yeah. Anytime a game offered me the abilities to get in there and mod and do stuff, I was down. And I'm looking now, Neverwinter Nights Enhanced Edition is only $5.99 right now on Steam. I'm going to pick it up right now.
No brainer, dude. No brainer. Absolutely spend money on that. I know it's a lot of content, but I'm telling you, it's great. It's so good. But that's something else I wanted to say. You know, this is the company that would go on to make Dragon Age, specifically the first one, Dragon Age Origins, which, you know, we're now into a more modern era, 360 PS3 era for that game. But in a lot of ways, it's Baldur's Gate. Like, that's the lineage.
Yeah.
And they're making, like, they're taking broad new steps and strokes to make the next kind of game like that. And I think in many, many ways they succeeded wildly with that first game. It's a wonderful game. Tons of depth, huge story, amazing mechanics. Like, it's really cool. This is, again, after that acquisition, and 2 was a bummer. 2 was weird. 2 was EA going, hey, what if it was a little more action, a little less RPGB, you know? What if we went after the kids with the action brains and the sugar in the blood? Why don't we do that? And they did, and it was not great. It was 2 was kind of a rough deal. 3, on the other hand, otherwise known as Dragon Age Origins. No, Dragon Origin, Age yeah. Inquisition. Sorry.
Inquisition. Yeah.
I loved that game. But again, it came out in the shadow of Skyrim and tried to be Skyrim in some ways. And I think they tried a little too hard in a couple of ways to make it more like Skyrim. And I think that was a detrimental thing. There is a new one in the works. It's a direct sequel to Inquisition. It looks pretty rad, but it's just fun to see the bookends of the beginnings of this with Baldur's Gate 1. It was clearly their primordial ooze for what would become this BioWare RPG style.
Yeah. And then this is literally of the beginning of BioWare. This is the end of TSR, essentially doing the Dungeons and Dragons for the most part, and handing over to Wizards of the Coast. And during that whole little thing that was going on, Interplay had the rights to get a game published based on the D&D, and TSR did not want them to use any of the good characters for this game, so, or any of the good locations. Yeah. Guess what?
Yep. You know what it's like? Bad. You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of, you know, the good Marvel stuff. We'll sell off and have them make movies so we don't have to. Well, that'll be Star Wars, or that'll be Spider-Man, and that'll be
exactly. X-Men. No one thought. Right?
No one thought these B-tier freaking Avenger characters were going to be anything, and now they are everything.
Yeah.
So you gotta, whenever you do that and you hand the keys to someone talented, don't expect them just because you gave them what you think is your junk that they're gonna produce junk. Yeah. Maybe they're gonna make something great.
I think, right, because you probably would forget that when we started looking at Marvel movies, the X-Men was the hotter property. Avengers had 100%. Fallen away from 100%. Favor.
Even Avengers, yeah. Even in comic book days, like even in the most ardent fans, no one was ever going to argue the Avengers was the big thing. Iron Man wasn't an A-lister. I mean, I like Iron Man just fine.
I used to have trouble finding somebody who would talk to me about Iron Man. I loved the comic Iron Man because I loved that flawed hero aspect. And they've turned it into something that everyone could love. I was shocked when my friends said they were going to see Iron Man. I'm like, you're going to see Iron Man?
Yeah.
You don't like Iron Man.
You don't like Iron Man at all. What are you talking about? Iron Man's dumb. And then you see Iron Man, you go, oh, okay, this is
even I was blown away because I was like, that's not the Iron Man I remember, but I like this vibe. You guys are right. This is hot. I like it.
So I feel like that a little bit of that happened here because they weren't giving them their best content base. They were just saying, here, take this. It's fine.
So they had a lot more free reign. Yeah. Therefore, they could make the characters they kind of wanted. They could really make things, they could make it their own. There's a big thing when you have ownership on something. It really shines.
What happened to Interplay? They're not around anymore, right? Yeah, 98.
They've changed their names a couple of times. Who are they now? But I think they've just...
They're gone now. They were Interplay Productions from 83 to 98. From then on, they were just Interplay. I'm trying to find an end date. Maybe not. They just don't. Let's see.
I thought they just morphed. I thought they kept morphing until they were something else now.
Interplay Discovery is Interplay, right?
You can go to interplay.com. They make, now they just make, I don't know what they make.
Matt Black Isle. We're
looking forward to Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance 2 on 7/2022. What? Yes, that's right. We're not going to get a chance to talk about Dark Alliance, which is a shame. But that
Dark Alliance, those games are so good. We'll just leave it to say this. The PC versions are fine because now those are out on there. But for the longest time, it was a PS2 exclusive. I think maybe GameCube had it. I don't remember.
There will be a Dark Alliance conversation eventually.
Those are so good.
So good.
Yeah, I mean, they're basically just Diabloification of the of the world, but I didn't care. I freaking loved them.
Yeah.
So good. Oh, so good. I could play that now. Do you remember they had an EverQuest one of that too?
I never played that though.
Oh, what was that called? EverQuest console game. And it came out around the same time, and it was also very good. It may have even been the same devs. I'm not actually sure. But this is called EverQuest. I can't find it.
I can't find the thing with the thing. How about I tell you something that didn't come out on consoles?
Yeah, what do you got?
It was the canceled PlayStation 5 disc version of Baldur's Gate.
Champions, that's it. Sorry, EverQuest Champions. Continue, keep going.
Oh, that's right. I do remember that.
Yeah.
They were working. Interplay was working to release. They were going to release a PlayStation version of this game, and it was pretty much completed. And you can actually, I think you can find copies of it. That was that close. It was a prototype, so you could find a prototype for that. There was also a Dreamcast port that was supposed to. I didn't find any hard concrete information on this, but I did see that they were working on a Dreamcast one. And then the person says for unspecified reasons in 2000, they canceled it. And I'm like, well, yeah, duh. It's not going to Dream. That's not going to happen.
No, because the Dreamcast at that point, you were already throwing some bad money at bad money.
Right.
Unfortunately.
That wasn't going to happen.
For good or for...
I don't think it would be a good idea.
I mean,
forget it for bad. Yeah, just.
I loved... I mean, look, I'm not going to complain.
No.
But, because I really liked, the Dreamcast. But the Dreamcast's days were numbered, okay?
It was definitely numbered. And not to mention, I mean, how do you even... Oh, my God. Because, they had the gig disc on that thing, too. So that would probably complicate things even more. Jesus, I don't even know.
Right?
I would hate to even think about it.
I know. Don't even think about it. Don't even stretch your brain to try to get around it, okay? Don't do it. There are some expansions. I should mention these. The Baldur's Gate Tales of the Sword Coast. This came out in 99. It was an expansion pack. 20 to 30 hours of that thing. That's a beast. Yeah. And had new areas, four new areas to be specific. Lots of content, higher level cap, all that stuff. And there was also the Black Pits 1 and 2, which I didn't
I wouldn't want to play the Black Pits. That actually looks... I played just a few minutes of Black Pits. It's pretty cool because you start off right away with like a large party and you're like, and you're basically fighting in the pits. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. They called me last week after 4 days of COVID and no showers. They called me Black Pits for a while.
They called me the Black Pits. Yeah. Have you seen Scott? He's the Black Pits.
He's the Black Pits. Anyway, I would really like it. I mean, well, whatever. We live in a time now where any two-man team have the resources where they can get together and make a really great, competent computer RPG if they want to. Like, right. You really can. You don't. It's no longer an unknown thing. Like, the tools exist. The you know, certainly if you've just got the wherewithal on gameplay and stuff, you could build a game like this.
I mean, it's really, there's already, I was doing some extra research in this because you're talking about the same things I was thinking about in Unity. There's plenty of people out there talking about Unity. There's engines out there that are similar to the Infinity engine. So all you got to do is just
plug away and go.
Put your assets in there, write the story, get some big epic story, get some great acting.
Am I wrong in thinking that there's a, what am I thinking of? There is a version, or no, maybe they open sourced the Infinity engine and you can just do all sorts of shit with it now.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Why do I know that? Hold on.
Why do I know these things?
Open source. Pretty sure this was a thing. Yeah, here we go. Oh yeah, I do remember this. So this was a long time ago though. So I don't know why I'm remembering it now. This game, okay, so the news hit back in 2012. Infinity Engine goes open source and cross platform. BioWare's Infinity Engine is the greatest RPG engine ever created. There, I said it. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, 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 blah. It says if you're filling out a template, you should fill out the sections related. Well, anyway. So, yeah, I guess that's the thing you can do now. You could go get a fork of this thing and just build a game if you want to.
Do it. What are you waiting on?
You got time, Brian. Come on. Get it in there. Stick it in.
Yeah, I got time. But let's just do it.
Yeah, I believe in you and your new hot game. What will you call it? What will your name? What will be the name of your game?
Brian's Fence.
Oh my lord, that sounds amazing. I can't wait to play Brian's Fence. Yeah. Do I have to paint
Brian's,
it and then
Brian's no Brian's Moat. I'm gonna go with the moat.
Oh, moat. Oh, that's even more middle evil. Yeah. Middle evil? Medieval.
Yeah. Middle evil.
Middle evil. There's also, by the way, an MMO that almost happened. It never happened.
Yeah. But that was the Infinity.
Right. Yeah. What was that called? I mean, that's the engine.
It was the Infinity. It was something with Infinity. What was the frick was it called? It was something, but that was the original version they were making it for. It was supposed to be an MMO.
Yeah, they were going for, again, they were aiming for, you know, kind of in the direction that the, I can't think of the name, the Ultima games were going.
Right.
Because Ultima Online, I think, was that same year or the year before, 97, 98, something like that. There was a book, Baldur's Gate series became a cult classic, netting itself an enhanced remaster edition about a decade ago, and three novelizations ended up happening. There was the title simply Baldur's Gate. This was released in 99. Baldur's Gate 2 Shadows of Arm in 2000. They're both written by Philip Anthens. Okay, and then in 2001, Drew Karpyshyn. He helmed the Baldur's Gate 2 Throne of Baal. However, fans of the genre aren't fond of those adaptations. And why is that, do you think? Why do you think people don't like them?
I don't know. I got to read them. That's a good question. I got to finish the game, get myself set, you know what I mean? So I can mm-hmm. be like all grumpy about it, get the lore in my head, mm-hmm. and then I'll read the other, and then I'll know when I need to be bad.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
I don't want to
read that. That's what it. I got to do. Really I got to fall in love with the character stories first, and then I can be mad that somebody changed them.
So one of the things about the new game coming out, it's being created by Larian Studios, who famously did the original Sin game. What's the name of the games? I have brain fog. What are they called? They're called Divinity Original Sin. And then Original Sin 2, which is the more recent one, 2017, 18, whatever it was. Still some of the best of this stuff ever made ever by anyone. It's incredible. Right. Incredible RPGs. And so they were perfect for this. They were perfect to hand this to and say, you guys are making the next Baldur's Gate. But I still have some questions.
You guys are making the next Baldur's
Gate. And I haven't played enough of the new one, you know, in its beta form to say one way or the other. But I do have some concerns that when I do play it, I'm just going to be playing, Divinity Original Sin 3, not true Baldur's Gate 3. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, yes, yeah, it'll like be set in that world. Hopefully some characters carrying forward. We'll have the D&D rules, all of that. But I'm a little, just slightly, just barely kind of a hairline concerned that it won't feel right. And I don't know why I feel that way, but I do.
No, that's a good feeling to have. That's how you keep from being suckered into something. Battleground Infinity, by the way, was the name of the original prototype RTS game that they were working on.
They were making an RTS. That's weird.
Yeah, yeah, but it was that was the whole idea. They were wanting it to be multiplayer RTS, you know, online. But they decided to do this instead.
Yeah, but when you mean RTS, you mean like real-time strategy, right? Like
right. Well, that's what it says.
Okay,
that's what it says on the Infinity.
I mean, the fighting engine in the game is kind of RTS when you're not paused. So
yeah, and that was always the problem.
Yeah,
the pausing solved one problem.
Yeah.
But then introduced another problem for multiplayer.
Yeah, you can't have one side pausing and you have to wait for them. That's F.
Right. Yeah.
That's F.
And if you look at the actual mechanics of how the Infinity Engine works and everything, it's like it takes all the real rules. It's like, you know, the character takes X number of seconds to, you know, cast spell, hit, whatever. I mean, all those calculations are going on in the background. And when you pause a game, it's it messes with multiplayer for sure. Yeah,
for sure. The other thing I think it did, the market left in gaming was anytime you see one of these games, they all use the same dialogue system, essentially, that existed in Baldur's Gate 1. And that is the whole, here's a chunk of text. Here are four options. You chose three. Number three takes you to four more options. Those will send you
a certain direction. What was your go-to? Okay, so we all know how to, you know, we know how to roll our characters and stuff, you know, choose their alignment and all that. Your alignment can be chosen beforehand, but do you stick to your alignment when you're doing your choices? Like,
well, in some cases, you have to, right? Because it'll force you to not, it won't let you do chaotic evil if you chose, you know.
Yes. Like, so do you like steer as far out of that middle of the lane as you can, or you kind of like try to, you know?
I don't know. Like in real D&D, I tend to veer. So I probably veered here and there, depending on the situation, which I think actually makes it interesting because that's the whole point. If your character is lawful good and you're put in a situation where you need to make a really hard choice, it should be difficult to choose, not just locked out of the hard, bad choice. It should be a hard choice to make. In these games, I tend to always pick the nice guy route. I don't know why. This is not me bragging because I don't understand why I do it. I would like to enter a game and go, I'm going to be the bad guy this time. I'm going to run this whole game as a jerk because you can. I just can't do it. I just can't do it. Feels wrong.
I can't even choose the snarky dialogue. That's how terrible I am. That's how lawful good I am.
You're just like, oh, if I say this, it's going to upset somebody. I can't say this.
Yeah, I can't say that's going to hurt their feelings.
Yeah,
I can't do that.
But none of this, like what you're describing here, I feel like none of this existed before Baldur's Gate. I never felt this way in a video game before that.
Yeah,
and that to me is a really important still standing achievement by the series.
Yeah,
and most other games copy it now. They all do it.
Yeah. Yep.
Including the new one. Anyway, we hope you go out and grab those enhanced editions. I mean, they are a little old now, 2013. Icewind Dale's newer though, right? I think.
I think that one
2015, maybe
15, something like that. Yes, yeah, it's later, and then that most recent one I was just telling you about is much more recent. Where's my?
Yeah, I think the Torment one, Planescape Torment, is also a newer edition.
Right.
I think they're all worth getting, everybody. If these games interest you at all, yeah, they're cool. If you have Game Pass, those Pillars of Eternity games, 1 and 2 is my favorite, from Obsidian Entertainment, are all part of Game Pass. Obsidian now fully owned by Microsoft, so they'll be putting stuff there. They've got some stuff coming up I cannot wait for. They're one of my favorite developers ever, but I'm not sure they exist without Baldur's Gate. I don't think they do.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely 100%. And I'll never be able to not picture pillows when you say pillars.
Pillars.
I all I can see is some southern guy telling me, hey, how come you got two pillars and I only got one?
Yeah, what's up with these pillars of eternity? Does that mean the pillar goes on forever and my head will never not have a pillar on it?
And then whenever we get through watching Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, he jumps up and goes, those aren't pillars. And, you know, then we start talking about football.
Yeah.
Or hunting.
Sure. Yeah. No, this is all good. I like to get a little peek into your brain. It's a good stuff in there. All right, let's move on. We're going to play a little game here, folks. It's called Guess My Game. All right. It's where we play some audio from an old video game.
And I put mine in last week, so good luck me remembering. Nice. Sweet.
Oh, I forgot to play its thing.
Destroy it.
All right, there's its thing. I'm going to start. This is a TurboGrafx-16 title from 1988.
Oh, nice.
Old school, okay? Old school TurboGrafx. And the reason I chose it isn't because I thought you might know it, because you're probably not going to.
No.
It just seems so dumb to me that I had to do it. Okay. Oh, and I played a bunch of it today. So anyway, here it is. Here's some sounds, see if you can figure it out.
I'm Dr. Bomb.
I'm Dr. Bomb. By the way, the game is not called Dr. Bomb, but that is what that guy said.
Is it I'm Dr. Bomb?
Nope. Nope. Dr. Bomb not in the title. Give you a hint, he's running left to right in a kind of a almost Mega Man sort of way.
TurboGrafx 16, 1988,
yep.
You said?
Yep, 88. I'm Dr.
Bomb.
Yeah. Have you ever seen Dr. Bomb, by the way?
I have not.
I'm going to show you a photo. This is your final hint, is you look at this photo, and if you still don't know it, you're not going to get it. Hold on, let me find it real quick here. I forgot where I put it. Here he is. Okay. Hold on. This is taking forever. Okay, there we go. Why is this taking so long? Okay, now I'm going to put this in our Discord, and then I'll also put it up in the chat to see it. And you tell me what you know about this. I got
almost somewhere between a Sonic and a Mario sound.
Yeah. Does that like guy look familiar?
Oh, that guy. Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is that's the guy with the head exploding. Dr. Bomb.
That's Dr. Bomb for sure. But what is the game he is in? Do you know?
He is in I ate all the cookies for the TurboGrafx-16.
You are so close, but so far away. I will tell you that is incorrect. Instead, I will tell you what it actually is. It is a game called Bravo Man.
Bravo Man.
Bravo Man.
Sounds familiar. Let me take a look at that.
Yeah, Bravo. It's all reruns of Queer Eye.
Oh, look at Skits getting it in the chat room. Good job, chat room.
Well anybody done, else? Skits.
Yes, not bad.
Did anybody play that Bravo besides Man. Me? I mean, I've only played it here recently, but it's
based on some anime or something, or is that? I think I'm looking at the wrong one.
I have no idea. Bravo Man is based on... here we go. Came out in Japan. Oh, this is Japan only, so that could explain it.
Yeah, that's okay. All my TurboGrafx experience has been through my Mr. FPGA, and the ROMs could have come from. Oh my God, have you seen the animated GIF? That is freaking fantastic.
Was it him kicking or what? What do you got?
He's punching something. Hold on a second.
Stick that in our Discord or something.
He's stabbing. He's hilarious.
So here it says right here. It's a beat-em-up arcade game originally. It ended up on the TurboGrafx. Developed and published in Japan by Namco. Described as a comical action game. Player controls the titular character, a bionic superhero with telescopic limbs. He must defeat the villainous Dr. Bomb.
So he's go-go gadget?
Basically. It says he can use his arms, his legs, and his head to defeat enemies, and you can crouch and jump over them. The game ran on a System 1 Namco board. The character, its name Hitoshi Nakamura, when he's not in his suit, it was a caricature of then-president of Namco, Masaya Nakamura, who the game is dedicated to. Wonder if he was cool with that. I don't know. It's pretty cheeseball, though.
There, right?
Pretty cheese bag.
Pretty cheese ball. I love it.
Hold on. I'm looking at this GIF now. Wait.
It's disturbing. It's like the second one down. Let me see if
where he's jerking that sword or whatever the hell
it
is.
Yeah, he's doing the herky jerkies. I thought it was that. That's the reason why I said cookie, because I thought that sword, because of the perspective of it, I thought he was holding a cookie.
Yeah.
But that's the sword in
it's like
in
a knife, and he's going, I am Mr. Bomb, and then he's... Who is
he's doing it into his crotch?
Who is rising against me? Is the thing
he's doing
saying.
It into his crotch? Though that was the part that disturbed me. Who is rising against me? Is it my crotch?
Is it my crotch?
Crotch boy?
Don't rise against me.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Oh my God! Yeah, just look up. What was it Bravo Man? and you'll find it. Don't worry.
You'll find that guy.
You'll find it.
I found another screenshot that says, "Hey, Bravo Man, I want to eat.
I want to eat.
Oh, no, want to eat. I guess that's not an I. They spaced out their, you know how these translations go. It's freaking weird.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
It's amazing.
By the way, if you're one of the Play Retro patrons, I'm going to put that animated GIF right there.
Oh, yeah, put that in there, dude.
I'm going to put that right in
there. Yeah. It's real bad, real dumb, and worth looking at if you have a emulated version of the game. Brian, I'm going to play your clip now, and you may or may not remember it, but I'll see if I can do it. So
I got it now. I finally pulled it up. Okay. I got it.
What do you got? What's the info on this?
The game is 1993, and the one you listen to is for the PC, but I will tell you it was on other systems such as the Super Nintendo Entertainment Center, the SNES. Also, the NES version, which is probably nothing like the one we're about to listen to.
Okay.
Game Boy and Sega Genesis, which is probably close to the PC version.
All right, let's give it a shot. Oh, that is some MIDI card business. Mm-hmm.
PC DOS. Would sound good.
Okay.
Why did he say okay? Oh, there's more.
Yeah.
Hold on. Did I hear? Is this Wayne's World or something?
It's Wayne's World.
Is it? There's a Wayne's World game.
It
what?
Is. What a tap! Excellent.
Hold on a second. What? Is that?
Are you mental?
I didn't know they ever made a game. That's hilarious. Is it good?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No.
No? It's not good?
Don't be stupid. Of course it's not good.
Okay. I wouldn't think it was good.
No. I mean, if you were into Wayne's World, it was, you know, serviceable, I suppose. But, you know, no.
Hmm. Interesting. Let's see here. Oh, yeah. That's a... Wow. I didn't know it was a DOS version. Nuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could see this on a SNES or something, but...
Yeah, I want to say I rented this for either the Sega Genesis one weekend, which is exactly what you would do with this type of game.
Yeah,
you
don't
would
buy not, this. No,
you wouldn't go buy this. But if you were at the, you know, if you were at the Blockbuster, you would probably say, eh, why not? What else they got here? I've already played all the rest of this crap. Let's play something.
Can you imagine like paying money to other than renting it? Oh, that'd be just terrible.
Right.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
All right.
Like well, I said, I was a pretty big Wayne's World head. But,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Now you're a true blue Wayne's Whirler. I get
Yeah.
Excellent. Party time.
Party time. Excellent. Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever bad thing they did. That's what we did. All right. Well, now that's a perfect time because now we can do emails.
Welcome to the Treasure Room.
Emails from those who are our own personal Wayne and Garth. For example, this one here from Tandy255. He sent this email to playretroshow@gmail.com, and he says, "Hello, Brian and Scott. I love Play Retro and Boop." Well, one of them's not here anymore.
But yeah, you can still love it, though.
You can still love it. I had a guy reach out to me on email the other day saying, "How would you like to take the final score to the next level?" And I wrote back and said,
"You mean past the final score?"
Yeah, and I wrote back and said, "How would you like to find out this far after the fact that the show has been 7 years?
6 years.
Yeah.
Six every year, yeah.
Yeah, dummy. Anyway, you often discuss home conversions of arcade games for early consoles. One of the reasons this was difficult was due to the orientation of arcade monitors. Many early arcade games had vertical monitor orientation, i.e. Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, Galaga, Frogger. Our home TVs, however, all used horizontal orientation. So how do you cram DK's Grinders or Pac-Man's Maze into a horizontal screen with limited resolution? For Pac-Man, the Atari 2600 opted to create a unique maze with the passageway going from the top to the bottom of the screen instead of left to right. As you know, right. The home version just felt too different for multiple reasons. For Donkey Kong, ColecoVision actually removed one of the girders. Geez.
Girders, yeah.
So Donkey Kong ended up on the right side of the screen instead of the left. It was not arcade perfect, but it retained the basic look and feel. It was popular home version of the game. Keep up the great work, Tandy255. Right. He says, P.S., think of the last man on Earth, not Tandy Computers.
Glad you it ruined it for levels. Me, Tandy. Yeah,
now it's ruined. Well done.
Nice yeah, job. I was retro Tandy and all in my head.
Mm-hmm. I had you in a, I was picturing this guy in a Radio Shack That's where we were.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you totally ruined the image. Okay. So yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. We've talked about that in some of the games we've talked about in the past. You know, some people sometimes would, turn the TV sideways or do crazy stuff, anything to get the aspect ratio right. Cause it is taller at the arcade on some games than it is wide. And, I think I would prefer as someone now, that if they just put Pac-Man in the center of the screen and had bars on the left and right hand side, I would have preferred that over the giant scrolling, because that actually broke the game in my mind. But I think there used to be a real big thing. I mean, when Letterboxd first started happening, when people started talking about putting theatrical movies on a 4x3 TV and letterboxing, you'd hear all kinds of complaining. What are those big black top and bottom? I can't see nothing.
Yeah, I can't believe I paid full price for this film.
Give me my pillar. I'm going to go to bed.
Give me my pillar. When my head hits my pillar tonight, I'm out. That's amazing. Here's a text we got from somebody. Oh, man, we like getting these. Let's see. 801-471-0462 is the text number to send messages into the show. It says, this is for Scott and Brian on Play Retro. Hey, they say. Here's some more unabashed Atari nerd stuff. When the Atari 7800 was designed, they were going to design a new sound chip, but because of budget constraints, they decided to use a TIA sound chip already on the board because of the 2600 backward compatibility aspect of the console.
I'd forgotten
about that. I forgot that you could put your 2600 cartridges in there, which is cool. So yes, the 7800 literally had the same sound chip as the Atari 2600. They did at least think of adding an extra pin so the improved pokey sound chip could be added to the cartridges. However, this was only used in two games, Ball Blazer and Commando. You should look up the Ball Blazer 7800 theme to see how much better the sound could have been. Cheers, Midwest Mint.
Midwest Mint. What is up, my friend?
Yeah, what's up, dude? Well, is he somebody who's also sent you a big box of things all the time? Is that what's going on?
He's always sending me big boxes of stuff.
Yeah, always.
Because I say stuff like, oh, hi, Midwest Mint.
Yeah, and then he says, here's a box. Here's a cool box. You want a box? I'm sending you a box.
He's real active in the community, and we love Midwest Mint. But yeah, that's a great that's something I didn't know. So that explains a lot. I can't believe those cheap bastards gave us the 2600 and said, close enough sound chip on there.
Yeah, that's why they all sounded that carried through the whole time.
That's crazy.
5200, 7800, all of it. They all had that chip because of the backwards compatibility, and they weren't spending the money on the thing. I mean, yeah, he did mention they had a new pin on there that you could take advantage of, but nobody did.
Yeah, obviously, so, like what, 2 Commando and that other game that he mentioned.
That's pretty wild, though. I did not know that was the case.
I did not know. That's some good stuff. That's some good juice. See, that's the reason why I say, oh, hey, because he's got that kind of knowledge.
Yeah, well done,
dude. Got a lot of knowledge of people in the community.
Thank you, Tandy, and thank you, Midwest Mint. You guys are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not Midwest Hint, it's a Midwest Mint. Our next game that we're going to be talking about is, you know what, I'm gonna just call it, I think we do Mario Kart and beyond. I think we start with the kart and then we talk about Diddy Kong, we talk about Crash Team Racing, we talk about all that stuff and why there's a weird little hidden gem from Konami nobody ever talks about that I think might actually take the top prize.
Worried before I talked to you today, because I know we talked on FilmSack and we talked briefly on TMS, and I'm like, I hope Scott's, is he rolling? Is he rolling? Is he doing the COVID? Is he over the COVID thing, sort of?
Mm-hmm.
You sound pretty good today, so I'm pretty stoked about the cart stuff next week.
Yeah, I love the cart stuff. I'm a big fan. I also do feel a lot better. Thank you for asking. And my goal is to continue to convalesce. I took a nice nap today before the show.
Good
because I was really tired and the dog looked tired, so I laid down with the dog and now I smell like the dog, so that's good. That means my smell sense is coming back. I can smell again, which is nice. Always smell if you can.
If you can smell.
Yep. So it'll be next week. We'll talk, obviously we'll start with 16-bit and why that game is so important to the future of games like it, but you know, I think we probably will spend some time on Crash Team. It doesn't, that game is so much better than it deserves. So much better than it
really is.
And why? Well, we'll talk about it. There's also an amazing enhanced version of that game that you should totally get. I think PlayStation has it on their monthly thing for free.
Ooh.
I think. Anyway, It's all good. We'll talk more about that coming up soon, and that'll be next week. I want to welcome a couple of new patrons to the show. Patreon.com/playretro is where they went, and we now have Tom Suit and Tony Mazes. I'm not sure.
Mazes and Tom Suit.
Ooh. Suit. Yeah, isn't that cool?
Fancy.
Yep. It'd be funny if it was Tom Merritt's suit. If he's like making payments with his suit.
I'm a patron.
It's really awesome, though, because we love having you guys here. And if you want to be like them, guess what? You'll never get an ad ever. You'll get pre-show content every single week. You'll get monthly benefits straight to you, all by simply signing up for the ever-cheap options available to you at patreon.com/playretro.
It's a dollar.
Yeah, I know, right? Cheap. Get in there. Get it while it's cheap. That's what I'm saying. Also, don't forget, playretroshow@gmail.com. That phone number to send us text, 801-471-0462. We're also on Twitter for as long as it lasts at Play Retro Show. I mean,
hey, you know what? Well, I made a Play Retro Show counter social account.
Oh, you did? Did you?
I posted a couple of things.
Nice.
Yeah.
We should put one up. Everyone's moving to Hive at the moment, and we may want to set one up there, too.
Nah, I'm not doing Hive. I hate Hive.
No, I'm not a fan of Hive. Don't like Hive? Or is that like it? I don't like Steam.
I just wanted to get it captured on audio. Oh. I hate Hive. I don't like Steam.
Oh, okay. So that's why it was familiar to me. It reminded me of a time not too many years ago. Well, anyway, we're over there in all those places. We'd love to see you there. I think that's going to do it. Don't forget, Brian plays a lot of these games, streams them after work on weeknights. Brian, no different this next week, right? You'll still be doing that?
Same, except for Thursdays, Thanksgiving. I won't do that, but I'm looking forward to maybe doing play date with Scott. We're going to find out if that can all work out or not.
If you're around Friday morning, we'd love to have you for that. That'd be great. We're going to play Among Us and Drawful.
Oh, nice.
We always warm up with a couple of drawfuls, and then we dive into Among Us for like an hour and a half, and it's great. So be prepared. You can play it on whatever platform you got it on. It doesn't matter. PC and handhelds, whatever. Phone, doesn't matter. All right, that's going to do it for us. Thank you all for listening. And come back next time, because look, you can leave, you can stay, but you can never... Wait, how's the Eagle song go? You can check in, but you can never leave? Wait. That's it. Whatever it is.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
You can go home, but you can't stay here.
Yeah, you can't stay. Wait, it's closing time. Everybody get your shit out of the bar and go F the home. All right, that's it. Thanks, everybody, for being here. We'll see you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
What is that I smell? A burning rage?
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.